Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Ayin Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 6 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, a nosei, where we read, Eich moinim lemitzri ad she muter lekohol. In our previous shiur, we made numerous references to the issue of a third-generation Egyptian convert, a mitzri that converts to Judaism. The Torah says that the mitzri people cannot marry people of pure Jewish descent until their third generation. Namely, a Mitzri decides to convert. He is called a Mitzri Rishon. His child is called a Mitzri Sheni. And if the Mitzri Sheni child, the child of the Mitzri Sheni, is called a Mitzri Shlishi. And that Mitzri Shlishi is allowed to marry a person of pure Jewish descent. We are going to be focusing on a pasuk from Dvarim, Perek Chof Gimel, pasuk Tes, regarding the Mitzri. And on the side, we have this quoted, Bonim asher yivoldu lohem, dor shlishi yavoi lohem bekal Hashem. The children that are born from the Mitzrim, their third generation, are enabled to come in married rank-and-file Jewish people. The Gemara will also make reference to a pasuk dealing that's found in Dvarim Perek Chof Gimel, pasuk Gimel, dealing with a mamzer, the illegitimate child, the child which results from the union of two forbidden people that would be punishable by kores. That's a fairly general rule that applies to mamzerim. The pasuk reads, and we have this on the side as well, it says, Lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem, gam dor asiri lo yavoi loy bekal Hashem. In the case of the mamzer, the Torah makes reference to even a tenth generation of mamzerim cannot enter the Jewish people. Mamzerim basically can marry, one mamzer can marry another mamzeris. There are some other rules that apply that the Gemara will feature as the sugyas continue. We continue now in the Gemara, 6 lines from the top. Tanu Rabbanan. Im ne'mar bonim, loma ne'mar doros. In Pasuk Tes, it mentions bonim asher yivoldu lohem. So once you mention bonim, that's a reference to the children that are born forth from them. So why does the Torah make reference to generations? V'im ne'mar doros, lomo ne'mar bonim. And if it mentions generations, why does the pasuk mention children? In ne'mar bonim v'lo ne'mar doros. Had the pasuk read bonim asher yivoldu lohem shlishi yavo lohem b'kal Hashem without mentioning generations, ha'yisi oimer, I would have thought something completely different. Ben Rishon Vesheni Osir Shlishi Mutter. I would have thought that an Egyptian that converts to Judaism, that has three children, the third child is Mutter to marry a person of Jewish descent. Well, that's not true. And how do I know that? Lekach Nemar, that therefore the Pasuk says, Doros, that it's a function of generations. But and as far as the Egyptian who converts, all of his children, no matter how many children he has, they are only second generation Mitzrim, and they are not allowed to marry people of pure Jewish descent. V'im ne'mar doros v'lo ne'mar bonim, had the Torah focused on generations and not mentioned bonim, ha'yisi oimer, I would have thought la'oison ha'oimdim al har Sinai, that the Torah, which restricts the marriage of Egyptian converts, is a reference to the first generation and the second generation of those that were present at the time that the Torah was given. In other words, an historical piece of information. L'kach ne'emar bonim. Therefore, the Torah adds the word bonim to indicate that it's not something that was one time in history. The first generation and second generation of Jews that stood at Har Sinai that received the Torah, and that's where the prohibition ended. But rather, it's for future generations as well. Lohem, the pasuk said lo. It said Doshli Shiavo Lohem Bekal Hashem Mehem Menei. That means you will count from them, from the one that converts. Rashi, you can see, explains Mehem Menei. Rashi, you'll find a few lines down from here. Who Rishon, the convert himself, is called first generation. Beno Sheni, his son is the second, and Uben Beno Muter, his grandson is Muter. That is the generation that can marry the Jew of regular Jewish descent. Lohem Haloch Achar Psulan. The pasuk said. Again, you see the word lohem, dor shlishi, it said bonim asher yivoldu lohem, dor shlishi yavol lohem. The word lohem, in fact, appeared twice in the pasuk. So the second lohem is darshind, haloch achar psulon. What does that mean? So Rashi explains, lohem haloch psulon, trei lohem ksivi, two lohems are written in the pasuk. Umashma haloch achar rehem, deim nitmeu b'ksherim kegon mitzri shenosi yisraelis. If you had a mixture of kosher with unkosher, namely a mitzri married Yisraelis, Yisrael shenosa mitzris, or a regular Jew married a first generation convert, a Jewish a mitzri woman, haloch acharehen vavlad pasu ad dor shlishi. That even though you have a mixed couple and one side of the couple is actually regular Jew, that does not matter. You follow the puzzle, the one that's disqualified sets the tone. We continue now in the Gemara. You'll see a new marking, triangles, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, the triangles featured, highlighting the word v'itzrich. Birur lomo yesh sarch lichtoiv milim sheinim uma hoyisi choshev ilulei nichtav. Here the Gemara will be focusing on words that we see in the pasuk and what I would have thought had those words not been written. The Gemara. V'itzrich lemichtav lohem, v'itzrich lemichtav asher yivoldu. You have to have both expressions written. Lohem, which we saw before, meant you count from them, from the convert himself, that's called generation one. And you also need the expression asher yivoldu. The E, kosav rachmon asher yivoldu, had the posuk left out the word lohem and simply written bonim asher yivoldu, dor shlishi yovo, so I would have thought have amino mibnehem b'nei. Had the Torah written just asher yivoldu, I would have thought that you start your counting from the convert's children. That would mean adding another generation till the Mitzri would be allowed to marry into the Jewish fold. Kosav rachmono lahem. Therefore, the Torah wrote lahem, which means you count from the convert himself. You count your three generations from the convert himself. Vi kosav rachmono lahem. Have amino mitzris meuberes shinis gairo hi uvno chad. I would have thought that an Egyptian woman that's pregnant, that converted, she converted while pregnant, that she and her child are considered first generation. Kosav rachmona asher yivoldu. Thereby, by writing asher yivoldu, that indicates that the mother is first generation and the offspring is going to be counted as the second generation. And as Rashi adds, that to tell me that any birth from her conversion onwards is considered an additional generation. Continuing. V'itzrich l'michtav lohem hocha, v'itzrich l'michtav loy gabi mamzer. By the Mitzri, you see the word lohem, we saw, and it taught us that you follow the one that's puzzle. And in the case of the Mamzer, the Pasuk said, Lo Yovo Lo Bekal Hashem, the word Lo, there also teaches me you follow the Pasuk. That would mean that if a Mamzer marries a regular Jew, the child is nevertheless follows the disqualified one, follows the Mamzer, and the child is also considered a Mamzer. So this concept is taught in both cases, both by the Mitzri and by the Mamzer. Why could I not have learned one from the other? Had the Torah written the idea that you follow the one that's puzzle in a mixed type marriage, you follow the one of lesser qualification or the more disqualified individual, if that would have been written only in the context of the Mitzri, Mishum Debo Mitipa Psula, because the child comes from a tipa, a drop, we'll call it the seed, which the parent contributes, like for example, the man's semen, that's the tipa. It comes from a Mitzri, a non-Jew tipa, drop, that produced him. Avo mamzer debo mitipo kshera. The mamzer, each parent in and of themselves are kosher Jews. Their union was prohibited, but they were kosher Jews, so the tipo, the drop that produced the mamzer, each drop was kosher, comes from a kosher source. So amo lo, I would have thought that in a case of a mamzer marrying someone on a higher level than him, then you would not necessarily follow the mamzer as determining what the child is. V'i kosav rachmona gabi mamzer, had the Torah written this concept that you follow the mamzer, follow the lower one of the two in order to determine the child. Mishum de'ein roi lovo bakola oilam. The mamzer has a more extreme problem, more severe problem than the Mitzri in that he can never come into the Jewish fold. Avol hocha, in the case of the Edomi and the Mitzri, Emolo, they have a possibility. Their third generation is mutter to marry a standard Jewish individual. So there it's not as severe. So I would have thought that in a mixed couple of Mitzri marrying a Bas Yisrael, the child doesn't necessarily follow the Mitzri. Tzricha, therefore it has to be taught there as well. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. The Gemara will feature a double underline and Roman numerals 1 and 2. You'll see the number 2 further down. This double underline highlights the names Rabba Bar Chana and Rav Dimi. These are Shnei Deos B'Rav Yochanan Bedin Benom Shel Mitzri Sheni Shenosa Mitzris Rishona. There'll be an argument concerning a case of how do you establish the status or the identity of the child of a couple where you had a second generation man, Mitzri, marrying a first generation convert, Mitzris woman. Another marking that we'll see is a bow tie that you'll highlights their conclusion. Benah will be a shlishi, or the Benah will be a sheni. Means the child of that union will be either considered a third generation or second generation. That's going to be the point of controversy. Eventually, diamonds will appear. Those will be kushos al maskonas rabo. Diomar Bosser Didei Azlinon. According to Rabba, the father will be the determining factor, and we're going to be questioning that, where he says you follow the father and not the mother. So let's now see how the Gemara unfolds these points being brought into focus. Omar Rabba Bar Chana Omar Rabbi Yochanan. We pointed out already, but do note that both Rabba Bar Chana and later Rav Dimi are both quoting Rav Yochanan. So Rabba says, in the name of Rav Yochanan, Mitzri Sheni Shenosa Mitzris Rishayna. Second generation Egyptian man marries first generation woman, of course, that converted. Bino Shlishi Havoi. The child takes on the status of a third generation Mitzri, and most importantly, that means that that son, that child, can marry a Jewish woman from standard Jewish descent. Alma kosovar boser didei shadino le. So this shows us, we see from here, that we follow didei means him, the father. So now, in questions of identification, is that really so that we follow the father? Mosiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges that conclusion. Rabbi Tarfon Oimer, Yecholim Mamzerim Litoher. Mamzerim, who are perceived generally to be permanently excluded, actually have a way of getting around that. Litoher means to purify themselves, but just so you don't make any mistake, we're not talking about the Mamzer himself, but rather his child or his descendants. Ketzad, how can that be achieved? Mamzer Noso Shivcha. If a Mamzer marries a bondmaid. Now, a bondmaid, there's a realm in Halacha called Avodim. Avodim is Shvachas. It's a realm or status that's not exactly Jewish, but it's also not exactly heathen. It's a special category unto itself. These are people that are obligated in many mitzvos of the Torah. So we have to appreciate the fact that they are not they're not considered purely non-Jews. So that a mamzer, if he marries a shivcha, Havlad Eved, the child takes on the status of the mother. The mother is a bondmaid that's in the realm of slaves. So the child is a slave. Now a slave has a way to be able to marry a rank and file person of Jewish descent, Shichuro, if he is freed. Nimsa ben Chorin. Once that slave is freed, he's a ben Chorin, he's a full-fledged Jew. Now, who was the father of this individual? A mamzer. Did his identity determine what the child is? No, it's the mother's identity that determined what the child is. So, alma baser dida shadina leisa. We see in terms of child identification, we follow the mother, contrary to what Rabbi Bar Chana had said. The Gemara answers, says that if you're citing the case of Shvachas and Avodim, you should realize that is governed by scriptural references, and hence you cannot use that as a question as on our situation of the Mitzri. Shiny Hassan, the case of Shivcha is different. The Omar Kro, the Posuk legislates Ha'isha Vilodeo Tia Lodaneha, which basically means that the children of the woman of the Shivcha, the children go with the mother, and they go to the owner. In other words, the child of a Shivcha is like her. That's the point that we need to take from here. Mosiv Rava. Well, we nevertheless raise another question on Rabba Bar Chana. Omar Rebbe Yehuda. The Tana Rebbe Yehuda tells us a story that Minyamin Ger Mitzri Hoyali Chaver Mitamide Rebbe Kiva. This, by the way, is a story that we saw back on Daf Ayin Vav not too long ago. Rebbe Yehuda tells us that he had a friend, and his name was Minyamin. He was a convert from the Egyptian people, and he was also a student of Rebbe Akiva, the Omar. And Minyamin said, "Ani Mitzri Rishon, v'nososi Mitzris Rishona. I and my wife are both first generation Mitzri converts. Asi livni Mitzris Shnia, kidei shehe ben bini roi lovabokol. I'm going to therefore have my son marry a Mitzris Shnia, a second generation Mitzris, and by my son marrying a second generation Mitzris, so my grandson can marry a person of pure Jewish descent. That means Roy Lavobako means is now fit to enter the Jewish community. If it were so, like Rabbi Yochanan had claimed, as Rabbi Bar Chana quoted him, then the son of Minyamin could have even married Afilu Rishona Nami. He could have married a first generation Egyptian convert. And if the identity is determined by the father, so in that case, Minyamin's son who eventually fathers a child, Binyamin's son was a Mitzri Sheni. His son would be a Mitzri Shlishi automatically if we would follow the father. But yet we see that that is not what Binyamin said. He was very concerned that his son marries specifically a Mitzris Shnia. What does that show us? It shows us that we don't follow the father in determining the identity. And here we're within the realm, by the way, of Mitzrim. Well, having heard that objection, so Rabbi Bar Chana answers, Ha'omar Le Rabbi Yochanan Latana. Well, you should know that Rabbi Yochanan pointed out to the Tana that you just quoted, to the source that you just quoted, he said it has to be fixed. Tani Rishayna. That Binyamin was saying, I will have my son marry even a Mitzris Rishayna. The grandchild will nevertheless be considered a Shlishi, because we do follow the father. Ki also Rav Dimyam Rav Yochanan, Mitzri Sheni Shinosa Mitzris Rishayna. Notice the same. This is the same case as was addressed in Roman numeral number 1. A Mitzri Sheni marries a Mitzris Rishayna. Beno Sheni Havoi. Even though the father is a Sheni, the child of this union nevertheless is itself only a Sheni. Alma Boser Ime Shadino Le. We follow the mother. Notice we now have a question. This is a long question. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye says to Rav Dimi, Elaha Diomar Rav Yochanan. What about that which Rav Yochanan teaches? And now we go into a very different realm. We go into the realm of sacrifices. More specifically, a sin offering. The Gemara here is assuming that we know a number of different halachas concerning sin offerings. So let us point out a couple of points of information. First of all, a person that is obligated to bring a sin offering, if, let us say, he loses that animal and he has to bring a replacement animal as a sacrifice. And then eventually, after having offered the replacement animal, he finds the original animal. There is an oral tradition that dictates that the chatas shekipru ba'aleha, a chatas whose owner already received atonement through some other chatas offering, that found animal is set off to die. It can't be used for anything, certainly not a sacrifice, not for your, it was sanctified, so you can't use it for your own personal benefit. It is set off to die. There's another example of a chatas shemesa, a chatas that is determined that is set off to die. That would be a case of a chatas, by the way, when you're dealing with individuals that are sinners and need to bring this kind of offering, it's a female animal. A chatas animal that had a child, it's called a vlad chatas. The vlad chatas also is an animal that, by oral tradition, is set off to die. Exactly how the animal is killed, that's a separate topic. We're not going to get involved with that, but we made the point just before that it means you cannot benefit from it, and it is also not used as a sacrifice. So we just mentioned two examples of chatos amesos to serve as background information. According to Rav Dimi, Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that in terms of determining identity of children, you will want to emphasize the mother. Now let's see how that stands up in the following case. Abaye asks, Elo Hodyam Rav Yochanan, Hifrish Chatas Muberes V'yolda. A person set aside, sanctified an animal that happened to be pregnant, and he declared this pregnant Chatas as this pregnant animal as a sin offering. Violda, and the animal before being offered gave birth. Rotsa miskaber, bo rotsa miskaber bevloda. The owner has a choice. He can use the mother for his atonement or use the offspring. E amers bishlama ubar lav yerachimo hu. If you say that the offspring is not an extension of the mother, literally not the leg of the mother, but it's a separate entity. Havilei, then the case of Hifrish Chatas Muberes, is kemafrish shtei chatos lachrayas. It's, you can parallel it to the case of a man who is guilty of bringing guilty of bringing a sin offering, and he's a little nervous that what would happen to the, if he sets aside only one animal, what would happen if it gets lost or stolen. So what does he do? He sets aside two animals. One serves as a backup for the other, and he says that if one gets lost, so I'll have the other one. That's mafishte chatois lachrais. Lachrais means as a guarantee, as insurance. The Omer of Oshaya, hifishte chatois lachrais, miskaper b'achas me'en v'ashnio tire. And Rav Hoshaya tells us a rule that when one does such a thing, he sets aside two animals as a sin offering that he intends to use only one, and the other one is there only as backup. So what happens is he slaughters one, in other words, sacrifices one, and the other one, tire, is set out to graze, meaning you eventually can benefit from it. You can benefit from the other one. So, if you just review the parallel that was just made, what was Rabbi Yochanan's din regarding the sin offering that you set aside that was pregnant? He said you can use either the mother or the offspring, and the other one will go out and graze. In order to say that, you have to establish that an offspring is not considered an extension of the mother, but rather it's like someone set aside two born animals, one serving as insurance in the case that the other gets lost. Continuing in the Gemara, Eloi Amris Ubor Yerech Imohu. However, if you say that the offspring is considered an extension of the mother, and what did you do? You set aside an animal as a chatos offering that, and it was pregnant. Have le vlad chatos. Then the offspring is the fetus is considered the child of a chatos. The offspring being an extension of the mother, so the child then is a vlad of a chatos. It's not a separate entity that serves as a backup for the mother, but rather it's an extension of the mother. It's a vlad chatos, and the word the vlad means the child of a chatos. Uvlad chatos lemisos, and we know that the animal born from a chatos is set aside to die, and meaning you can't benefit from it. And yet Rabbi Yochanan said above, you have a choice. You use one and the other one goes free. Ishtik. Upon hearing this objection, Rav Dimi remained silent. In other words, Rav Dimi claimed that the mother, that the child is an extension of the mother, and hence in the case of the Mitzris Sheni that married the Mitzris Rishon, Mitzris is the mother is a Rishona, the child is considered an extension of her, making the child a Sheni. But here in the case of the sin offering example, we see that in order for Rabbi Yochanan's halacha to be justified, the Hifrish Chatos Muberes V'Yolda, in order to legitimatize that, you'll have to say that the offspring is not an extension of the mother. Because if you say the offspring is an extension of the mother, the offspring would then be classified as a vlad chatos, and that has to be set aside to die. Rabbi Yochanan did not say that, though. So Rabbi Dimi remained silent. Omar Le, Abaye, who raised the question, now chimes in and says, Dilma, Shiny Hossam. Maybe the case of the Mitzri is different. Dichtiv Asher Yivoldu Hakosiv Taloi Beleda. In the pasuk Devarim Perichav Gimel pasuk Test, the pasuk we cited above, birth is emphasized. The Egyptian that births a child, so the third generation is able to marry into Kal Hashem. So the fact that Leda was emphasized, so only in the case of Mitzri are we going to say that the child is an extension, a continuation of the mother. So that's Abaye's, we'll say, justification for Rav Dimi's original teaching. Omar Le, Rav Dimi says, Karkafna. Karkafna is an expression indicating a smart man or wise man or important man. He says, you are Abaye, a port man. Chazise l'reishoch, beini amudi. Ki osa Rav Yochanan, ki oma Rav Yochanan l'hosh maitza. I saw, says Rav Dimi, I saw your head. Your head means your rabbi. Meaning, I saw Rabbah between the pillars in the study hall when Reb Yochanan said this teaching. So that which Abaye is saying is something that Rav Dimi is pointing out. You're not saying this on your own. You are actually saying over something that you heard from Rabbah, your teacher, who had learned by Reb Yochanan, the one I was citing. So that, very good, what you're saying is a good explanation. Namely, by the Mitzri, we have a special consideration, since it says Asher Yivaldu, the mother becomes the determining factor. But we're not necessarily going to apply that to other cases. The Gemara now asks a question. Notice this is a long question. This will take us to the second line from the top. However, we have to note that the latter part of this long question is in brackets. So we continue now in the Gemara. Taimo deksiv ashi vodu. So the reason for saying what we did, namely that the mother is the determining factor, is because in the case of the Mitzri, because it says Asher Yivaldu, but in general, you would say that the father determines status or identity. Well, in Rava Nachris Muberes is Gaira, a pregnant Gentile woman. While pregnant, she immersed for conversion purposes in a mikveh. Bino ein tzorech tevila. The child, when born, does not need conversion immersion. Part of conversion is the necessity to immerse in a mikveh. The child, in this case, benefits from its mother's immersion, so its mother's immersion helps for it, for the child. Well, if you're telling me that in general you follow the father, amai ein tzorech tevila. Why do you say that the child does not need its own tevila? Meaning, once again, if you say that you don't follow the mother in other areas, so then how do we say over here that the mother's tevila, the mother's immersion, satisfies tevila requirements for the child as well? At this point, there's a bracketed section where the Gemara attempts to respond, but the response is rejected. And let us skip the bracketed section for a moment. The Gemara says, "Shiny ubar." The case of the ubar is different. Meaning, in general, father is a determining factor. With regard to the Mitzri, we said it before, Asher Yivaldu, that's different. With regard to the issue of Tevila, that's also an exception. Why? Dehainu Revise. This is the way it develops. It's considered as if the mother, we say that the mother's immersion helps for all of her limbs. And the offspring is, since this is its normal way of growth and development, it's the fact that it's inside the mother's body is not a chatzitza, it's not an interposition. So it's as if the child directly was immersed. Not that it's a beneficiary of its mother's immersion, but it had its own immersion. Ah, you'll say, but it was covered over by the mother's body. It's inside the mother. But since that's the way children, that's the way fetuses develop, that's revise, its normal way of growth, the fact that it's contained within something else is not viewed as an interposition, as a chatzitza. So now, that having been said, we can go back to what Abaye said, and Rav Dimi substantiated that, that in general, we do in fact, we don't say that you follow the mother, and that was illustrated by Rav Yochanan's halacha with the Hifish Chatas Muberes, that the child is an independent entity. As far as Mitzri is concerned, we saw the Xeris HaKos of Ashi Valdu, and as far as this halacha of the immersion, it's not considered as if the child is immersing, is benefiting from the mother's immersion in the mikvah, but rather it's as if the child was directly immersed. Now, we mentioned the bracketed section that we now have to go over. We said just before the brackets, as part of our challenge to Abaye's answer, that you see that the Gentile woman who converts while pregnant, the child doesn't need its own tevila. So that would seem to say the child doesn't need its own tevila. That would seem to say that we do follow the mother. The chitema mishum deribya. So we're reading in the bracket, second line from the bottom of Amud Aleph. You might say, well, this is based on Reb Yitzchak. Diyomar Rebbe Yitzchak. Devar Torah. On a Torah level, when you're dealing with the rules of immersion in a mikveh and the rules dealing with chatzitza, with interposition. When one immerses, it's expected that one's body comes into direct contact with the mikveh water and that there's nothing blocking the flesh from the water. So on a Torah level, Rubo umakbid olav chotzeitz, Rubo she'eno makbid olav eino chotzeitz. That a chatzitza is only a chatzitza if it covers the majority of the person who is immersing and he is upset. He is does not approve. He's makbid of it. If you can imagine a person who is generally speaking, showered and well groomed, and his body is covered in black grease. So that's a case of if most of his body is covered in black grease, and he is also makbid. He doesn't like that situation. If he tries to immerse in that state, it won't be effective. That would be called a chatzitza midorais on a Torah level. However, imagine someone who might be covered, most of his body is covered in grease, but it doesn't bother him. Imagine an auto mechanic, possibly, someone who spends many hours of the day underneath cars repairing them. So naturally he's covered with grime, and not only that, it might even be something that he likes. It shows how diligent an auto mechanic he is. So that's a case of Rubo She'eno Makbidolov. So that, being that he doesn't, he's not mindful of it, it's considered like part of him, so it's not a chatzitza. So you might say that is the explanation of how the ubar benefits from the immersion of the mother. If you look in the Rashi at the bottom line, at the second to last line, the Rashi says, "Mishum Rebitzel Dom Advarto Rubo Makbudo of Chotzeitz V'Chalo Kopid B'Hai Chatzitza Hai Vlado." The Ravi say, "Who here the child is not bothered by the fact that it's covered by its mother. It needs to be covered. That's because that's how it grows. That's how it develops." Even though we know that rabbinically speaking, even though he's not makbid, the rabbi said it's ineffective. Here we're talking on a Torah level. We're talking about from a Torah standpoint, does the child need immersion or not? So we're saying from the Torah standpoint, it doesn't need immersion. You might want to sell. So what is enabling this child to be free of the immersion requirement? So we're trying to say, in establishing our question, we're trying to say it's a sign that the child does follow the mother. If you want to argue, no, the child doesn't really follow the mother, but the child is a beneficiary of the immersion because it's a case of Rubo Shein Magbidolov, but that's not really it's not a case of Rubo Shein Makbidolov. The child is completely separated, not just the majority of him. We're at the top of Amud Beis. V'Omar Rav Kahana lo shonu elo rubo. The allowance that we just mentioned is only if the majority is covered. Avol kulo chotzeitz. But if the individual is completely enveloped in something else and completely surrounded by something else, complete non-contact with the mikvah, so it is a chatzitza. So if it's a chatzitza, is it not so that this vlad is completely enveloped by the mother? And if it's completely enveloped by the mother, how is it that the child does not need tvila? It must be because the child is considered a part of the mother, an extension of the mother. And if that be the case, then we're still in our question mode. How can it be said that in general we would follow the father? In general meaning outside the realm of Mitzri. Here you have something outside the realm of Mitzri, and we are once again following the mother. The Gemara answers, Shaini Ubar. The case of the Ubar is different. Dehainu Revisei. Since the Ubar needs to be completely enveloped in the mother, that's the way it grows. So that the mother's immersion is the fact that it's enveloped in the mother is not a chatzitza. And again, to repeat the main point, it is rather as if the Ubar is directly immersed and not to be explained as the immersion of the mother benefits the Ubar. But again, rather, the Ubar itself is immersing. So that we don't have an illustration from this din of the Nochris Beres Shetovla, we don't have that as a challenge to the concept that in general, the father is the determining factor. Before we continue, we glance at the side, we have an Osei topic heading, which reads, Bezayin Umos. With regard to the seven nations, these are the seven nations that occupied the land of Israel, or the land of Eretz Canaan, before the Jews entered. Regarding those people, the Jews were instructed to kill, to eliminate all of the members of the seven nations that occupied the land of Israel. That's a general word of background. Rashi also says this at the top line, at the end of the line, Beumos, Besheva Umos. Regarding the seven nations, the Inyan lo sechayah kol neshama, the Pasuk says, you shall not leave any one living. Haloch achar hazechorim. You determine the identity based on the males. The commandments will be explained. So now we, having said that, in our introduction, on the side under the Nosei, we have written, Bezayin Umos, the Inyan lo sechaya kol neshama, ech koivim aichus, when there's a matter of, let's say, a mixed couple, one is a member of the seven nations and the other is an outsider, from Thailand or from China or from Australia or North America, is not from the seven nations. So how do you determine the identity of the child? And we'll also deal with the situation of Nisgairu, where there is conversion that takes place, conversion to Judaism. So now the Gemara. Ki osa Ravina, Omer Rav Yochanan. We're on the third line from the top. Be'umois haloch achar hazochar. Nisgairu haloch achar pogum shebishneim. So Rav Yochanan mentioned two halachas, and the Gemara will review these two halachas, and that you can see with our Mivneh heading. This is simply the two halachas, shnei halachas of Rav Yochanan. So here, as we say, the Gemara is now going to review these two halachas, giving sources. Be'umos haloch achar hazochar. You say, amongst the nations, when you want to determine the identity of the child, you look at the father, Kidisanya, as is explained in the following Tanaic source. Minayin le'echod mina umois, shebo al haknainis, v'hoilid ben. When echod mina umois means someone who comes from one of the other nations, a Chinese man, let us say, has relations with a Canaanite woman. the Canaanite, what the reference to Canaanite woman is a reference to those, one of those seven nations that occupied the land of Israel that we, the Jewish people, were ordered to kill upon entering the land and conquering the land. So you have a Chinese man marries a Canaanite woman, and they have a child, Vaholid Ben. From where do we know, Shata Roshay Liknosa Bevet, you can purchase that child as a slave. In other words, he doesn't fall under the ruling or the teaching, the commandment of Lo Yisachaya Kol Nisham, of leave no one alive. And by saying this, of course, we're showing you that matters are determined, identity is determined by the man. So that here we have a man who's a Chinese individual. So from where do we know that? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'gam mibnei hatoyshavim hagorim imochem mehem tiknu," and also from amongst those residents that are living amongst you, you can buy them as slaves. Now, the pasuk itself, I would not say, is so clear. You know, how do you see that illustrated here? So we take a look at the Rashi. Tamen lomer mibnei hatoshavim shebo'u me'umo yisachirim v'nasu avoysam toshavim b'mekoy mechem. The pasuk, by saying toshavim, is alluding to a man that came from another land, from outside the seven nations, and moved into Eretz Canaan. And the pasuk says you can buy them. You can buy the bnei hatoshavim, their children. Let's continue in the Gemara. Yochol afilu echad min haknainim shebo al achas min ha'uma Yisraelit ben shata roshay liknos ha'evet. Could it be that a Canaanite man that has relations with a woman from one of the other nations, from China again, and they have a child, could you buy him as a slave? Is he considered Chinese? No. Talmud lomar asher ha'ilidu ba'artzechem. The pasuk that gave license to buying someone as a slave, it said asher holidu b'artzachem, min ha'lolde b'artzachem v'lo min ha'gore b'artzachem. You're allowed to buy those that were born in your land, but not those that dwell in your land. Now that itself, once again, is vague. There is, however, a limitation point in this pasuk. In other words, the pasuk is telling us when you can buy, and we infer there are circumstances that you cannot buy. So there's a limitation element in this pasuk. How does this show that ba'umos halocha achar azochar? So let's continue with the Rashi. Min halolodim ba'artzechem. We had mentioned before asher holidu ba'artzechem was in the pasuk. What is that? How do you see that what we're describing here is the case of the father from China and mother from Canaan? Rashi says, "Min anolod ba'artzechem, she'imoi ma'artzechem." The woman is Canaanite from your land. V'yoldosoi shom, and she bore him there, the child. V'lo min agorim ba'artzechem. There was a mute in the pasuk. We said, "Asher li ba'artzechem, min anolod ba'artzechem, v'lo min agorim." There's someone excluded that you cannot buy. Those are the gorim ba'artzechem. What does that mean? She'noilad v'mokom acher. He was born somewhere else. She'imo min sha'ar umos. The mother is from some other land. She's the one that's giving birth. So we say, when the mother is birthing in your land, that means she's a Canaanite woman. If we're talking about Gorin Ba'artzechem, you're talking about a lady that comes from another land that moved into the land of Canaan. And what happened? How is it that she moved into the land of Canaan? Because her husband was a Canaanite. And as Rashi says, "Shenolad b'mokom acher, shimo min sharu, must be achar kapol lo gur eitzel ofet ba'artzechem." And then she, the lady from China, who was impregnated by a Canaanite man, she then moved into Canaan. Derech ish shalios b'mokoma, v'derech ish liglois. It's customary for women to remain in their locations, and the man goes into exile, so to speak, leaves his location. Hilkoch, anolodim boretz, when the pasuk describes a child born in your land, Vaday imo mishiva umos. It's clear that the mother is in her own land, and that's where she gave birth. Aval hanolodim b'mokoy macher. When you describe a woman that gave birth somewhere else, vaday imo mishar umos. The mother is definitely from another land. So when the pasuk mentions asher holidu ba'aretzchem, that's a Canaanite woman that gave birth, though her husband was from another land. That type of offspring you can buy. You don't have to kill. However, Gorim Ba'aretzchem describes a situation where the mother had been from some other place, and Gorim, and they came and moved into the land of Canaan. So the woman comes from another land. The father is, in fact, Canaanite. It's most likely that when we are excluding from permission to buy, that's the case where the father is Canaanite. So what if we established here that when it comes to umos, when it comes to identifying the child, establishing his status, we look at who was the father. If the father was a Canaanite man, so we see that in a case where there is a child born from the Canaanite man uniting with a Chinese woman, that child has the status of a Canaanite because the father was Canaanite. If the father was Chinese and the mother was Canaanite, the child's identity is Chinese because the father was Chinese. Continuing in the Gemara, Nisgairu halocha achar pogum shebishneim. If they convert, then you will establish the child's offspring by he who is the lesser amongst the two parents. Bemai. What are we talking about? What's the case? Rabbi Yochanan said, Nisgairu halocha achar pogum shebishneim. Pogum means the deficient one, the more deficient one from amongst the two. So what is he talking about? B'mai. Ilemo b'mitzri shenosa amoynis. My pogum shebishneim is ba. The word shebishneim means they're both problematic, and one is more problematic than the other. But in a case of a mitzri that married an amoynis, and then we're talking about both converted, where is there a problem in the two of them? Amoni v'lo amoynis, the amoynis is not problematic. The Torah excludes only the male Ammonites, not the female Ammonites, as we saw extensively in our previous shiur. Elo, so what's the case? Ba'amoni shenosa mitzris. An Ammonite man married a mitzris woman. Now, both of them have problems. The Ammonite man is permanently prohibited from marrying into the Jewish people, and the mitzri has a problem in that only their third generation can marry into the Jewish people. Now we want to focus on the child of this couple. The child is either male or female. E zohar have, if the child is a male, shadye boser amoni. We will then define the male child as an Ammonite. And what does that mean? He cannot marry into the Jewish fold. Because if you were to look at the child, let's continue in the Gemara. E nekeva havi, if the offspring is a female, shadya boser mitzris, we will consider the daughter of such a union as a mitzris. That would mean she has a second generation mitzris, and not consider her an Ammonite female, because as an Ammonite female, she would have been allowed to marry immediately into the Jewish people. And hence, by saying pogum shebishneim, you follow the more problematic of the two in the parents. In the case of a female birth from this particular union, the pogum, the more problematic labeling, would be labeling her, the child, if it's a daughter, like the mother, the mistress. The Mishnah. Before we continue, we have a topic heading, Mamzeres Achar Eser Doros. We'll talk about Mamzerim after 10 generations. The Torah itself mentions that a Mamzer cannot enter the Jewish fold for 10 generations. The Mishnah. Mamzerim Unesinim Asurim. Mamzerim, and those are illegitimate children born from a union of man and woman where the punishment is kores. Nesinim are descendants from the Givonim. Givonim were one of the seven nations that through trickery converted to Judaism in the time of Yoshua, and Yoshua established them as being woodcutters, wood choppers, and water bearers, water drawers. There's more on that topic later in the Gemara, but it just gives you a flavor, as Rashi says here. The Mishnah then says that the Mamzer and Nesinim are forbidden. They cannot marry into the rank and file Jewish people, and their prohibition is permanent. Echad Zucharim v'Echad Nekevis, making no distinction between male and female. Omar Reish Lakish. Mamzeres the Achar Asara Doros Muteres. If one can keep track that many generations, so a Mamzeres, 10 generations later, she can marry, if her great-great-grandfather, etc., going back 10 generations, was a Mamzer, she can marry into the Jewish people. And how does Reish Lakish know this? Yolif Asiri Asiri Me Amoni Umayovi. You find the term Asiri in the case of Amon and Moav, and you find it in the case of Mamzerim. Ma lahalon nekevus mutaros, just like in the case of the Amon and Moav people, the females are allowed. Af kan nekevus mutaros, so too the female Mamzeres, after 10 generations, will be muteres, will be allowed. The Gemara asks, well, is this parallel really tight? Ima lahalon by the Amoni miyad. The female Amonis is muteres immediately upon her conversion. Afkan miyad, are you going to say the same thing by a female Mamzeres? She's muteres immediately. The Gemara answers, no, that we're not going to say. Ki ahani gzero shava, the word comparison that we mentioned before, is me asiri v'elich. It's beneficial, it's effective, only from the 10th generation on. The Rashi elaborates on this. Me asiri v'elich. The ad asoro dos. We're reading the Rashi, you can see in the narrow lines halfway down the page. He says, me asiri v'elich. The ad asoro doros. Until the 10th generation, when you're dealing with Mamzerim, the Isura, Begufei de Mamzer Ksiv, the Torah explicitly says 10 generations. And by the way, we have the Pasuk included on the side of the Gemara, Dvarim Perichot Gimel Pasuk Gimel, where it says, Lo Yovel Mamzer B'Kal Hashem, Gam Dor Asiri Lo Yovel Lo B'Kal Hashem. So in the case of Mamzer, the idea of a 10th generation is said explicitly. So leko lemigmar miamoni denekevus mutaros. We can't learn within 10 generations. We can't learn from Amoni to allow the female mamzeres. Daha mamzer. The word mamzer is a compound expression mum zar, a blemish that is strange. Mashma vafilu nekevus, by saying that mamzer, even though the Torah speaks in the masculine form mamzer, but since the root of the word is mumzor, it indicates something strange, something wrong, and that was in fact the union of the two of the couple, the man and woman, that are punishable by kores. So that word mamzer includes a filu nekevus. Avol me asir v'elech the isur b'gzera shava the amoni moyavi yolif. But beyond the 10th generation, from the 10th generation on, where the Isor is learned from Amoni and Moavi. Now, the Deha Lav B'Mamzer Ksiva, there's a lot, the Torah writes, as far as females are concerned, beyond the 10th generation, you don't see a restriction regarding the females. Hilko hetero nami. Oh, let us correct ourselves. Avo me'asir v'elech. Let's go back to the Rashi just a couple lines before, just for more accurate reading. Avo me'asir v'elech. The sub gezeres shavad amoni mo'avi yolif. The idea of something being prohibited in the case of a mamzer beyond the 10th generation, it doesn't say that explicitly by the mamzer. That is determined only through a gzeres shavah from Amoni and Moavi. Hilkoch etera nami lenekevos mine yolif. Since I'm already learning the issues of prohibition beyond the 10th generation from an outside source, I'll learn also from the outside source regarding females. The Omar don mino umino. Kidala, come on. As Rashi will explain later when you deal with Xeroshova, how, technically speaking, do you make Xeroshova when you have one topic where there's known information and another topic which is needs to be discovered? How much information do I derive from the known topic in order to determine the unknown topic? In this case, the known topic is ammonia mo'avi when you're dealing with the time frame beyond 10 generations. The unknown topic is mamzer beyond 10 generations. By the way, in the case of the up till the 10th generation, so the pasuk said by the mamzer dor asiri lo yovalo. How about beyond the 10th generation? Well, there's no indication, but when you look in Amon and Moavi, there the Torah, in addition to writing dor asiri, it also mentions ad olam, permanent. A permanent prohibition, meaning even beyond the 10th generation. So you'll ask, why does the Torah mention dor asiri by Amon and Moav? The answer to that is in order to make the Gzeirah Shava, in order to link it up to the case of the Mamzer. Through that Gzeirah Shava, we then know that with regard to Mamzerus, there are problems beyond the 10th generation. The question is, how far does that go? How far, how inclusive are the problems? Are they male and female or just male? So now we go back to the Gemara. We ask, V'ho'anantanan, but we have a Tanaic source. It says, Mamzerim, Unesinim, Asurin, these people are Osir, the Mamzerim and the Nesim are Osir, V'isurin, Isur, Oilam. And we dashed underline Oilam. That means their prohibition is permanent. Echod Zechorim, the Echod Nekevus. And notice we dashed underline Nekevus as well. Echod Nekevus. So what is this saying? This is a Tanaic source. It is our Mishnah that says that Nekevus, Mamzerim Nekevus, are also permanently. So how can Reish Lakish, who is an Amora, come off saying that a Mamzeris is muteris after the 10th generation? The Mishnah says Mamzerim are permanently prohibited. Loi Kashya. There is no contradiction. It's not as if the Mishnah refutes Reish Lakish, but rather Reish Lakish and the Mishnah represent two different schools of how you construct and how you, let's say, how much information you learn through the Gzeira Shava. The approach, and we saw this before in the Rashi, the approach taken by Reish Lakish says that you learn both points of information from the known, from the original source. In other words, the case of Amon and Moav, what do we know about Amon and Moav? We know that there's an issue of permanent prohibition. That's one point of information. And that we need to learn over to Mamzer, that by Mamzerus there is also an element of permanent prohibition. Now the issue is, what about a distinction between genders? So in Amon and Moav there is a distinction. So according to Reish Lakish, I carry that information as well over to Mamzerus. So there are two points. That's don mino. Don means to learn. Mina from the other source, in this case ammonium only, that's the outside source. I learn from that concept of permanence. Umina, and another point I learn, distinction between genders. However, our Mishnah, Ha'keman de'omar, our Mishnah reflects the other approach to Gzeirah Shavah makings, which means don mino ve'uki ve'asra. That means some information I will learn from the outside source. Once again, I'm learning Mamzerus from Amon and Moav. Now what's the sum information? The concept of permanent problem beyond 10th generation, that I will learn from Amon over to Mamzerus. However, the issue of gender distinction, no. The Ugi Ba'astro means regarding that topic, you stay in your location. Asra means the topic of Mamzerus. Regarding the additional information from Amun and Moav, gender distinction, that, no, I'm not going to learn that. And I stay in the realm of Mamzerus. And in the realm of Mamzerus, as we saw before, Mum Zar, no gender distinction is made. If we skip down into the Rashi, you can see, I'm going to read the Rashi together with you. On the third wide line under the Gemara text, there's a diamond, actually a second diamond. And Rashi there says, V'tana didon sovalo keman domar don mino v'uki v'asra. Don mino means some, I will learn from Amun and Moav to Mamzerus, mal alon ad oilom. Just like by Amun and Moav, there's an issue of permanent prohibition. Af Mamzer ad oilom. So too, by Mamzerus, permanent prohibition. Even though the Pasuk by Mamzerus said only 10th generation, but the Gzeres Shava, Siri tells me even beyond that. V'uki v'asra. As we established the issue of gender, like we were originally speaking. The 10 generations that were mentioned by the Pasuk in Mamzerus itself, there we made no distinction. Mamzer, which equals Mumzar. Hachinami, so to hear after the 10th generation, also, Ad Olam de Maisinim, Gzeres Shava, the Ad Olam concept that we brought into Mamzeres through the Gzeres Shava from Amun and Moav, Echad Zecharim v'Echad Nekevos, not only males, but females as well. And that is the basis for our Mishnah. Let us now turn back to the Gemara text. Shalu es Rebbi Eliezer, Mamzeres v'Achar Asoro Dori Mahu, the female Mamzeres means after 10 generations, what is her din? Omar Lahem, Rabbi Eliezer, in characteristic style, doesn't answer the question directly. I say characteristic style, we find elsewhere in Shas, particularly Maseches Sukkah, you find how Rabbi Eliezer, if he is responding to a question that he doesn't have an actual tradition, an actual teaching from his predecessor, so he oftentimes he gives answers in a somewhat an indirect fashion. So Omar Lahem, Rebbe Lezer says, Mi yitain li dor shlishi vatarenu. If someone will only even give me a third generation, and I would purify him. In other words, Rabbi Lezer is saying, how can you talk about the 10th generation of Mamzerus when you don't even have a third generation of Mamzerus? As Rashi says, what Rabbi Lezer is saying, you're asking a question about something that can't come to be. Almo Kosovar, the Gemara goes on to say, you see, the inference that Rabbi Lezer holds, Mamzera lo chayi, that Mamzerim do not live. No, there's not going to even live to have children. V'chein omar Rav Huna, Mamzera lo chayi. Mamzerim, illegitimate children, illegitimate people do not live. I've wanan tnan, but our Mishnah says, Mamzerim asurim v'isur nisur olam. The Mamzerim themselves are also, they can't marry into the Jewish fold, and their prohibition is permanent. So you see that they do live, and their children are prohibited. So if a mamzer has a child, regardless of how he has a child, as he marries another mamzeres or he marries a Jewish woman, the child is labeled a mamzer. That child is usher, and the grandchild is usher forever. Omar Rabbi Zera, Levim for Shleminei, the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda explained to me, it was explained by Rabbi Yehuda the following. There are three categories. And after discovering these three categories, we'll then understand that there is no problem or no contradiction, do Mamzerim live or not? The Adiya Chai, well-known Mamzerim, people who are publicly known as Mamzerim, so the general public will stay away from, they won't marry them, so there's no problem in their continuing to live. The Lo Yadiya Lo Chai, a child is born, a Jewish woman has a child, we don't know who impregnated her. In fact, someone that was forbidden to her impregnated her. But people don't know that. You can have, unfortunately, you can have many situations. Imagine a married woman fools around with some other man other than her husband. That child is a mamzer. That's relations with an ashes ish. So the woman bears a child. People don't know that story. She knows it, but no one else knows it. That kind of child, through, we'll say, heavenly decree, that kind of child will not live. Very simply, because people do not know to avoid. They think that he's a kosher Jew. They don't know that he is a mamzer. So, because of the distinct possibility of someone marrying him, someone that shouldn't marry him does, heaven ordains that he shall not live. The yadia v'lo yadia, someone who is, say, questionable. Some people know, some people don't. It's not clear. So we say as follows regarding that situation of yadia v'lo yadia ad losadori chai. Three generations of that kind of person will live. For three generations, people will know that this is a grandchild of someone who was possibly a mamzer. So people will know to stay away. However, tfei lo chai, a fourth generation won't come to be. That more than that, they will not live. Hahu dehave b'shvusi de Rabbi Ami. There was a person in the neighborhood of Rabbi Ami. Achmas olei de mamzer havi. And Rabbi Ami announced, this guy is a mamzer. Apparently he wasn't known as a mamzer before that. The person walked around and was crying, very upset. Amar lei, Rabbi Ami said, Chayim nosati loch. I have bestowed upon you life. Now that you're a well-known mamzer, so you fall into category number one, yadir chay. Otherwise, people didn't know, and you might end up dying, so as to avoid anyone marrying you. At this point, we have a noseklo, a general topic heading, and this is a long topic. It lasts till Ayin Tesomit Beis, and it concerns the Nesinim, the people that were mentioned in the Mishnah, the people whose origin was in the seven nations, and they an act of connivory, presented themselves as outsiders, as not from the seven nations, and converted. So here we'll discuss them for quite a while. Omar Rav Chona Bar Ado, Nesinim David Gozar Aleim. And here's a very long point. You'll notice that this takes us down quite a few lines down Ayin Tesom and Aleph. The Nesinim were the subject of David, King David's ruling that we are not to marry the Nesinim. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vayikra Melech la Givoinim, Vayomer Aleim. Now, Givoinim is a name of a people that we in the Mishnah call Nesinim. Vayomer Aleim, and he said to them, Vagivonim lo bibnei Yisrael hema. The Givonim are not from the Jewish people. My time of Gozar Alayu. What is the reason that David HaMelech issued a ruling against them? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayirov bimei David shalosh shonim, shona achar shona. For three consecutive years, there was a famine in the days of King David. There's a double underline that highlights years 1, 2, and 3. And the Gemara will now discuss the problem that David HaMelech confronted in trying to understand why did a famine befall the people. Shona Rishona Omar Lohem, first generation, he said to them, Shema Oivdei Kechovim, Shema Oivdei Avoidas Kechovim Yesh Bochem. Maybe amongst you there are idol worshippers. Dichtiv, Vavadetem Elohim Achirim, Vishtachavisem Lohem, Vyotzar Sashamayim, Lo Yamotor. We say this every day in the Kriyas Shema, in the second paragraph of the Kriyas Shema, that when one engages in idolatry, the heavens are sealed up, there's no rain, and that leads to famine. Bodku Volo Matsu. The nation checked and found there were no idol worshippers amongst them. Shnia, second year of the famine. Omar lam shema oivrei avero yesh bochem. Maybe there are people that are immoral amongst you. Dechtiv, vayimonu revim malkosh lohoyo metzach isha zoyna hoyoloch. The revivim, or the rainfall, will be withheld, and Malkosh, also another name for rain, will not happen. And you see in the pasuk the brazenness of a harlot is your character. So that zona, znus, this has to do with immorality, and that's associated with the withholding of rain. Bodku v'lomatsu, they checked out and found that also was not a problem. Shlishis, third year of famine. Amar lam shema poiskei tzedaka b'rabim yesh bochem. Maybe there are amongst you people who pledge charity, the ein nosdim, after making pledges and don't come through. Dichtiv nesiim v'ruach v'geshem ayin ish mishalu b'mata sheker. The pasuk describes clouds and wind, but no rain, and that's a function of someone who boasts about his phony gift, his phony philanthropy. But Kuvalamatsu, they checked out and found that wasn't a problem either. Omar, so David says, Ein ha-dover tolui elo bi. The matter is dependent exclusively upon me. Miad, and now the Pasuk says, Vayevakish David is Pnei Hashem. And David sought out the guidance from the Almighty. My he. What does that mean? Vayevakish David is, what do you mean he turned to the Almighty? What does that mean? Omar Reish Lakish Shishrab Urim V'tumim. It means that he consulted the high priest's breastplate that had letters written on it, and the letters would reveal miraculously answers to one's question. My Mashma, how do you see in this pasuk the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, the Urim V'tumim, the stones on his breastplate? Amr Belozer, Shrabo says, we can see that through a word comparison. Asya, Pene, Pene. Through the word Pene, elsewhere and here. Ksiv Hocha Ve'avakesh David is Pene Hashem. That's what it says over here. Uksiv Osam V'shalo B'mishpat Ha'urim Lifnei Hashem. So you see the word Lifnei has as its root Pene. And in that pasuk, the Urim are the stones on the king, on the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem El Shaul v'El Beis Hadomim al Asher Hemis es Hagivonim." The reason for the famine is because of King Saul and because of the Givonim that he killed. Now, what does that mean? El Shaul Shelo Nispat Kalocha. First of all, when King Saul died, he wasn't eulogized properly. And I'm angry about that, and therefore that's one contributing factor. Vel beis hadomim ala shehemis is a givonim. And a second problem is that King Saul killed the givonim people. Vehechon motzino b'shol shehemis a givonim. Where do we see that Shaul wrought destruction upon the givonim people? We don't see that Shaul waged war against the Givonim. Elo mitoch shahorag nov yirakehanim. Shaul, without getting into the entire biblical recount of what took place, but there was a city of priests. The city was called Nov, and Shaul was responsible for their elimination. That city was wiped out, and that city had provided livelihood for the Givonim people. Shahoyu maspikalim mayim umozoin. The Givoni people were provided with water and food because of the service that they provided for the priestly city. And since the Givonim source of income was stopped because their employers, so to speak, the Kohanim of Nov, were wiped out. Mal of Akosuv Kilu Hargon. It's considered as if Saul, King Shaul, killed them, the Givonim. By cutting off someone's livelihood, it's like killing them. The Gemara asks, this is somewhat odd here. On the one hand, Kodesh Baruch Hu is upset with Shaul's not being eulogized properly, indicating he was worthy of a proper eulogy. On the other hand, you're saying that he's considered as if he's a murderer. Kotova el Shaul shalispa kalocha v'kotova al asher hemis ha-givonim. How is it such that both things are being, tova means sought out by God. God is claiming, God is punishing for these two seemingly opposite considerations. What says in this is true, this is the way of Hashem. The Yomer Shlokish, my dichti bakshu es Hashem kol anvei haoretz asher mishpato pa'alu. Ba'asher mishpato sham pa'alu. Rashi explains the bottom line, ba'asher mishpato b'mokum shedonim adam sham maskirim po'al tzidkosav, where a person is being judged, all of his actions and all of his righteousness is recounted. And that's everything is brought into account, the positive and the negative. Omar David. David, upon hearing this, says, Shaul, as far as making amends for Shaul's lack of eulogy, Nafku Luhu Shresar Yarchi Shosa Velo Darke Lemispade. 12 months have passed since his death, it's actually 30 years, but even 12 months, beyond that, it's not the way to eulogize. So that's a lost cause. There's nothing that I can do about that. Nisinim, however, regarding the Nisinim, the Nisinim that were there at the time of David, Nikrinu v'nefaisinu, let me call them, let me summon them, and let me try to appease them. Miyad, amini vayikra melch legivoinim, vayomer aleihem, what can I do for you and achieve atonement and blessing for the inheritance of God? Vayomulo hagivonim ein lanu kesev izavim shol v'im beso. The givonim said, we have no money claims, no silver nor gold with Shol nor his descendants. V'ein lanu ish, and all we have is yutan lanu shiva anoshim ibona v'kanim lashem. Give us 7 descendants of Shaul and let us kill them, let us execute them and hang them up, and that will be the solution to our grudge. Well, David heard that, and now he has to execute the 7 descendants of Shaul. He's very upset with that. Mephias, he tried to appease them, the low Paisinu, and they resisted appeasement. We're in the middle of a sukya, but upon main point is David, upon hearing their obstinance and rejection of appeasement, Omar David said, "Shloishish simonim yesh b'umazu." There are 3 signs that characterize the Jewish people. They are harachmonim va'bayshonim v'goyim lechasodim. They are merciful. They are meek. Baishanim is a reference to someone who is embarrassed or meek-natured, and gomle chasodim, and are practitioners of good deeds. And let us skip this bracketed section momentarily. Kol sheyesh bo shloisha simonim halolo, anyone who has all 3 of these signs, roy lidobek b'umazu. Any outsider, a person who wants to convert, that has these characteristics, is fit to cling unto this people, unto the Jewish people. However, the givonim that are not rachmonim, they are not merciful, they are not fit to cling unto the Jewish people. And this is the main point, and it's with this that David issued his gezerah against the givonim. In the brackets, we go over sources for each one of these characteristic traits. Rachmonim, Jewish people are called merciful. Dichti v'nosan loch rachamim v'richamecha v'irbecha. That's the God bestowed mercifulness upon us. And bayshonim dichti bavurtiyeh yirasoi al peneichem. The God-fearingness, meekness is upon us, the Jewish people. Goyim lechasodim dichtiv, leman asher yitzave ezbonav ezbeso v'chule. The pasuk that deals with Avram Avinu, and it describes his descendants as being practitioners of chesed, of loving kindness. And as we said, kol sheyesh bo shloisha simonim halolo, anyone who has these 3 characteristics, roy libdobek b'umazu, they are deserving of clinging to Am Yisrael, to joining the ranks of Jewish people, of a people that demonstrate their lack of their cruelness, we'll say. They do not deserve to join the Jewish people, and hence David made a gzeira against the Nisinim, the Givonim. The Gemara will continue extensively on this topic. In the next two pieces, we'll discuss the what actually happened afterwards. But we'll conclude at this point. But before we do so, let's remind you, if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.